evening for WBAI News in New York. I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Wednesday, March 1st, 2017.
Mr. Speaker, Mr. Vice President, members of Congress, the First Lady of the United States.
Donald Trump showed he could read a teleprompter and stay on script last night, delivering a televised speech to the joint session of Congress.
And citizens of America, tonight, as we mark the conclusion of our celebration of Black History Month, we are reminded of our nation's path toward civil rights and the work that still remains to be done. Recent threats targeting Jewish community centers and vandalism of Jewish cemeteries, as well as last week's shooting in Kansas City, remind us that while we may be a nation divided on policies, we are a country that stands united in condemning hate and evil in all of its very ugly forms.
It was a speech where he touted the necessity of increasing the military budget.
Our military will be given the resources its brave warriors so richly deserve.
He's looking to increase the budget by $54 billion and cut non-military programs by the same amount. And he reaffirmed the Republican goal of repealing the Affordable Care Act.
Tonight, I am also calling on this Congress to repeal and replace Obamacare. With reforms that expand choice, increase access, lower costs, and at the same time provide better health care. Mandating every American to buy government-approved health insurance was never the right solution for our country.
More on that from NARAL shortly. Meanwhile, Trump made no mention of climate change, and he touted deregulation.
We have undertaken a historic effort to massively reduce job-crushing regulations, creating a deregulation task force inside of every government agency.
Regulations, he said, which threaten the future of coal miners. And he continued to frighten immigrants last night. He gave an anecdote which showed he equated violence with immigrants.
Jamil's 17-year-old son was viciously murdered by an illegal immigrant gang member who had just been released from prison. Jamil Shore Jr. was an incredible young man with unlimited potential who was getting ready to go to college, where he would have excelled as a great college quarterback. But he never got the chance. His father, who is in the audience tonight, has become a very good friend of mine.
The anecdote, which blurs the lines between people who are undocumented and people who are criminals, continues to make that false connection, even though several studies show that immigrants are less likely to commit crimes than people born in the U.S. Hours before the speech, the New York Times and the Associated Press and others reported that Trump had softened his stance on immigration, suggesting that legal status be granted to millions of undocumented immigrants who have not committed serious crimes. But today, Vice President Pence, making the rounds on network television, said the administration is still determined to defend its original travel plan. It was blocked by the federal courts. Pence said a variety of agencies are putting final touches on a revised executive order. It temporarily bans travelers from certain countries and restricts refugees from entering the U.S. Pence says the administration will defend Donald Trump's original ban, which Pence says we fully believe is in his presidential authority, and that's what was questioned by the court. Trump, in his speech to Congress, reiterated his mission of building a wall between the U.S. and Mexico.
We will soon begin the construction of a great, great wall along our southern border.
This prompted the president of 32BJ SEIU, Hector Figueroa, to tweet out, "Build your freaking wall. By the time you are done wasting billions of taxpayer dollars, we would have built a movement to take your house." And Donald Trump paid tribute to Navy SEAL William Ryan Owens, who died in a military raid which Trump ordered.
I just spoke to our great General Mattis just now, who reconfirmed that, and I quote, Ryan was a part of a highly successful raid that generated large amounts of vital intelligence that will lead to many more victories in the future against our enemy.
Reports Trump sought to disprove are that the military raid yielded no significant intelligence. He was backed up today by Vice President Mike Pence on network television. And you're listening to the news on listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio, WBAI, in New York. After Donald Trump's speech, Senator Bernie Sanders said White House priorities are wrong, and he gave his response.
We should not be cutting massively programs for people in need and then significantly expanding spending for the military. And let's be also clear, the $84 billion that President Trump wants to pump into the bloated Pentagon budget could, just as one example, provide free tuition at every public college and university in this country and begin to reduce the crushing burden of student debt in America. That is a choice. Do we add another $80+ billion to the Pentagon, or do we allow every qualified young American the ability to go to college tuition-free in a public college and university and substantially reduce student debt? I think the choice is clear. I think we do not need to greatly increase Pentagon spending. And while President Trump wants to slash programs that the elderly, the children, the sick, and the poorest Americans desperately rely on, he also thinks that it is a great idea to provide nearly $3 trillion in tax breaks to the top 1%. Middle class shrinking, 43 million people living in poverty, the rich doing phenomenally well, and Donald Trump wants to provide $3 trillion in tax breaks for the people on top. That is an outrage. Furthermore, President Trump claimed tonight that American corporations pay the highest tax rates in the world. We're going to have to lower substantially tax rates on large corporations. What he said is untrue, not true. According to the Government Accountability Office, one out of five large profitable corporations pays nothing, zero in federal income tax. Today, we are losing $100 billion in revenue every year because corporations are stashing their cash in the Cayman Islands and other offshore tax havens. These corporations don't need a tax cut. They need to start paying their fair share of taxes. Tonight, President Trump once again made it clear that he plans on working with Republicans in Congress who want to repeal the Affordable Care Act, throw 20 million Americans off of health insurance, privatize Medicare, make massive cuts in Medicaid, raise the cost of prescription drugs for seniors, eliminate funding for Planned Parenthood, while at the same time, he wants to give yet another massive tax break to the wealthiest Americans, which is what would happen if the Affordable Care Act were repealed. As he did during his campaign, Donald Trump claimed that he would bring down the cost of prescription drugs. A few weeks ago, he even said that the pharmaceutical industry was, quote, getting away with murder, end quote. But if Donald Trump really wanted to take on the pharmaceutical industry, he would have told his Republican friends in the House and the Senate to pass legislation, which I introduced today with 20 senators, allowing Americans to import safe, low-cost medicine from Canada. We should not have to pay the highest prices in the world for the medicine we use. Since the beginning of this year, we have seen unprecedented grassroots energy from Maine to California. Last week, at Republican town hall meetings across the country and at more than 150 rallies that took place from coast to coast, the American people sent a clear message about what they expect from Congress. As a result, the Republicans are getting very, very worried. They're not so cocky anymore about simply repealing Obamacare. And they should be worried because the American people are standing up. And what they are saying loudly and clearly is, no, you're not going to repeal the Affordable Care Act. No, you're not going to destroy it. you are going to improve it. And in my view, what we must be doing right now is not only defending the Affordable Care Act, not only improving the Affordable Care Act, we have got to move forward to join the rest of the industrialized world and guarantee health care to all people as a right, not a privilege. We must go forward towards a Medicare for All single-payer program. But defeating these attempts to destroy the Affordable Care Act and transfer even more of our nation's wealth to Donald Trump and his billionaire friends is going to take all of us coming together and making our voices heard. Those of you who attended rallies or town hall meetings, keep showing up. Keep calling Congress and continue the fight. The Republicans are now on the defensive, and we've got to continue to push them back. Those of you who haven't taken action yet, we need your voices. We need your action. Only together, when millions of people stand up and fight for economic justice, for social justice, for racial justice, for environmental justice, only then can we create the political revolution that will turn this country around.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders in his response to Trump's address to Congress last night. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. Kaylee Hansen Long and Hannah Grotch Begley with NARAL, the National Abortion Rights Action League, who had participated before Trump's speech in a resistance rally, delivered a response after his speech to Congress.
So we just got done watching President Trump's joint session of Congress and have to say, not too impressed. I know the bar was super low the last month of policies or non-policies and executive actions that this administration have proposed are just a total disaster for just basic freedoms, women, immigrants, LGBT Americans. And I didn't hear anything that changed the past month and like the disaster that he was just wreaking havoc on America. Did you hear anything?
No, I mean, Trump is really, really good at sort of empty promises and giving these speeches that say a lot of things that have no specifics in them whatsoever. And when you look at the specifics of what he's actually done, what he's actually accomplished, we've seen again and again hurting women, hurting children, hurting Americans. I'm not hopeful after this speech that that will change. I think it's just more of the same.
Yeah, and I think, you know, thinking back about some of the lines he threw in there that were supposed to impress women, I'm just thinking about his, you know, Ivanka's paid leave proposal that completely left out working fathers, LGBT Americans, and thinking back to, you know, the things that he said about wanting to defund Planned Parenthood, repeal the Affordable Care Act as he, you know, doubled down on tonight. That is a whole other, you know, issue for women, obviously, just the advances that law has made for us. And I can't take anything he said seriously in terms of, you know, helping us get ahead.
Absolutely. And on top of that, when he does say something vaguely concrete, it's impossible to achieve, right? So women's rights are apparently going to be protected because of Canada. I love Canada, love Justin Trudeau. I'm not sure that that's what we as Americans should be relying on. The Affordable Care Act, he says it's going to be cheaper and everyone's going to get covered and not. He has no plan to do that.
Right. And the fact
experts have said that's impossible.
Yeah. Well, and of course, we've been waiting and waiting and waiting for years for any sort of real replacement plan from the Republican Party. And we haven't seen anything at all that would actually help Americans and women specifically. One thing that I was thinking a lot about tonight was Neil Gorsuch. He was touting his pick for the Supreme Court, Neil Gorsuch, who, as we know, has a real anti-choice record. He has sided with a politician who...
He's more conservative than Scalia.
More conservative than Scalia. And, you know, that is something that I think about a lot when I'm thinking about Donald Trump these days. Rens Priebus, Donald Trump's chief of staff, said that Neil Gorsuch is someone who shares a vision for America with Donald Trump. So that's a vision where women should be punished, I guess, where immigrant rights are non-existent, I guess. You know, what did you think about that?
Absolutely. I mean, I think we knew going into this speech that part of the focus was going to be Trump trying to tout the success he's had so far. Mm-hmm. And one of those successes is appointing Neil Gorsuch, who perfectly fulfills the promise Donald Trump set, mm-hmm. which was that he was going to choose a justice who would overturn Roe v. Wade mm-hmm. and who would back his extreme conservative agenda when it comes to abortion. Mm-hmm. Neil Gorsuch clearly is that person. I mean, I've seen no evidence proving otherwise.
Yeah, and you know who agrees with you are people like Troy Newman, Kristen Hawkins. Yep. You know, Troy Newman, someone who endorsed the murder of abortion providers. Kristen Hawkins is someone who says that in her perfect world, IUDs and birth control would be illegal.
And those people are celebrating Gorsuch, literally right. so excited that that was the pick. So, right. I mean, as far as I can tell, yeah, this is Trump's agenda, that he wants to harm American women, he wants to take away our rights, and this speech just doubled down on all of that.
Yeah, you know, it's just, it's so disappointing to have watched that, and, you know, it was real, and unfortunately we're not getting anything out of it, you know, in terms of advancing women and families in this country. So, you know, I guess we'll just have to stay tuned, but the bar remains pretty low. Expectations are pretty low.
But Kaylee Hansen Long and Hannah Grotch Begley say NARAL will keep fighting with their 1.2 million member activists. You can find out more about fighting for women's rights at NARAL by visiting NARAL.org. And while Donald Trump pushes for an increase in defense spending, there's concern that state budgets would suffer. Andrea Sears reports.
The National Priorities Project says the United States already spends more on defense than the next seven largest military budgets in the world combined. The proposed $54 billion hike in military spending, or almost 10%, would be carved out of domestic spending and foreign aid. Lindsay Koshgarian, the group's research director, explains states would be huge losers if those cuts take place.
States get, on average, about 30% of their budgets from the federal government. And this is about a 10% cut to domestic spending. You can definitely expect that to trickle down to the state.
Governor Andrew Cuomo's proposed budget for New York State does not account for drastic changes in federal spending. I'm Andrea Sears reporting.
And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. Governor Andrew Cuomo today addressed the rash of anti-Semitism across the state. He spoke at a JCC, a Jewish community center in Albany.
There have been bomb threats, desecration of Jewish cemeteries, swastikas, racist slogans that literally have appeared from one end of the state to the other. We've seen it in Tarrytown, in Staten Island, in Manhattan, Syracuse, New Rochelle, Buffalo, Plainview on Long Island. It doesn't seem like it's getting better. If anything, it seems like it's getting worse. This is repugnant to everything we believe as New Yorkers. It is an act of cowardice. It suggests a basic misunderstanding of who we are as New Yorkers and what we believe as New Yorkers. This state was founded on the premise of equality and the promise of freedom from discrimination. We are all immigrants in this state. We are all from someplace else, unless you're a Native American. And the operating principle is that we open our arms and we embrace all. That's what this state is about fundamentally. And these acts of anti-Semitism are repugnant to that very premise. It's especially reprehensible when you think that these Jewish community centers often primarily handle children. They offer daycare. They offer pre-K services. So these threats are against children. And when you talk of really ugly, reprehensible behavior, I don't think there's anything worse than racist activity, bigoted activity, and targeting facilities that serve our children. It is also, not only is it immoral, unethical, and disgusting, it's also illegal. And it violates the law. And we want the perpetrators to know that we are fully committed to doing justice in this case. This is intolerable for us. The state police of New York have been organized. They've been given additional resources. A special unit has been put together under Superintendent George Beach to investigate just these activities. The state police are working hand in glove with local police as well as the FBI. And everything that can be done is being done. And I'm confident that we will find the people behind this illegality and ugliness.
Governor Cuomo announced today that he is traveling to Israel in a gesture of solidarity as acts of anti-Semitism spread across the nation. Meanwhile, as Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas urged the international community to protect the two-state solution, this in a message aimed this week at Israel and the new Trump administration, activists gathered last night internationally and here in New York for the 8th annual Shuhada Street campaign. It's against Israeli settlements in Hebron on Palestine's West Bank.
From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free.
The New York chapter of Jewish Voice for Peace, along with Code Pink, organized a march. It started at the Charging Bull on Wall Street to the offices of Goldman Sachs. Matt Bailey reports.
Organizers gathered to protest Goldman Sachs and their charitable contributions to the Hebron Fund. Asaf Calderon with Jewish Voice for Peace says Goldman Sachs supporting the Hebron Fund is bad for Palestinians on the West Bank.
And this is an organization that donates directly to the settlement in Hebron, theoretically for needy families and so on and so on. Obviously, this money is going to sustain the settlement, which includes armed people, includes people that are deliberately attacking Palestinians, throwing rocks on children, and creating a situation that causing the Israeli army to have to block the entire city as part of to protect them. They're being a catalyst for the complete destruction of civilian life in the city of Hebron.
This year marks the 50th year for the Israeli occupation in Hebron. Zvia Tir, an Israeli who stood up against the settlement, says the situation is dismal for Palestinians living on Shuhada Street.
If you want to know what apartheid is, go to Hebron. There is a small path where Palestinians can walk, and the street is for the Israelis. The Palestinians are not allowed to use any car there. They have just a small path. The Palestinians that are left there, because it's very difficult to live there, their apartments is covered with nets because the settlers, they throw their garbage and stones and whatever. They are so mean towards them, Palestinians. There is so much hate that it is really unbelievable. Anybody who wants to know what does it mean apartheid, what does it mean? I even can't call it occupation because for 50 years you don't call it occupation anymore. It's colonialism at the worst.
Hebron contains 7,000 Palestinian residents, the number of Israeli settlers, 850, and yet they have managed to take over the city. Matt Bailey, WBAI News, New York.
And this is the news on WBAI in New York. In other Trump administration news, Montana Representative Ryan Zinke won Senate confirmation today as Interior Secretary. This gives him responsibility for overseeing the nation's 400 million acres of public land, mostly in the West. Zinke is 55 years old. He's a former Navy SEAL and Montana State Senator. He resigned as a delegate to the Republican National Convention last year in protest of the GOP's position in favor of land transfers to state or private groups. But he voted in favor of a House rule that would allow federal land transfers to be considered cost-free and budget-neutral, making it easier for drilling and development. Senator Maria Cantwell of Washington State, she's the top Democrat on the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee, said she's not convinced Zinke will be able to stand up to Trump and prevent oil and gas and mining companies from unduly exploiting public lands. Senator Cantwell.
And I'm not sure he'll be able to stand up to the president and protect the public interest that is required on our public lands and manage for the benefit of all Americans, not just the oil and gas and mining companies and their commercial interests. The Secretary's principal job is to be a guardian, a steward of the public lands. To me, stewardship is so important. So many of my colleagues come to the floor and act like they're managing this resource for their lifetime and their generation. Stewardship is about managing these resources for future generations as well. If our past ancestors had been so callous with these federal resources, where would we be today? So it is so important that we not look at these federal lands through the narrow resource that someone has in their particular state or interest, but make sure that stewardship is about future generations as well. So with that in mind, I have seen several laws and regulations already under attack that are fundamental to keeping that mission of stewardship at the Department of Interior, including the Clean Water Act, the Federal Lands Policy and Management Act, the Clean Air Act, the Surface Mining Control and Reclamation Act, and the Antiquities Act. While Congressman Zinke said he would oppose the transfer of federal lands to the states, which I appreciate that he has said that, at the same time, he indicated he is willing to consider transferring away management of certain federal lands to the states. So what does that mean? For example, you could have had a monument or a designation of federal land. It could be even Mount Rainier or some beautiful place in the Pacific Northwest, and consequently transferring that back to a state. And that particular state wouldn't happen in Washington, but might happen in some other state. They decide to start managing that land and extracting resources. You think, well, that couldn't possibly happen. Well, I have news for you. That is the debate du jour. This is exactly the debate today.
Senator Maria Cantwell of Washington State. The Republican-controlled Senate approved Ryan Zinke's nomination 68-31. 16 Democrats and one independent joined with 51 Republicans to support him. Several Democrats from Western states, as well as those facing tough re-elections next year, including Montana's John Tester, Indiana's Joe Donnelly, and Joe Manchin of West Virginia, voted for Zinke. And that's the WBAI Evening News for Wednesday, March 1st, 2017. The news was produced with Andrew Sears, Matt Bailey, and Reggie Johnson. I'm Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.
Sick and tired of your isms, kissing, getting